Welcome to the latest edition of the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
So today we're going to try and delve into, maybe we'll call it peel back the curtain a little bit.
Yeah.
Talking about aquarium fish value and pricing and sourcing and...
This is like sort of important for anybody out there who's breeding fish and looking to trade them in, or somebody who wants to know how we come to the prices we sell our fish at, I suppose.
And the prices we're willing to pay for somebody else's fish.
Right.
Or the prices that people buying fish are willing to pay for fish.
Yeah.
Which is my roundabout way of saying, if you're listening to this podcast because you think we're going to give you the secret of how to get rich off of zebra plecos, this is the time for you to click off now.
or listen farther and don't waste a lot of money.
it's a topic that is, you could go so many different directions with this topic. And I think we're going to try and focus, you know, because we're so good at staying focused. What are we talking about again? Anyway, we're going to try and focus on what this means for hobbyists.
Yeah.
Both from a supplying a store perspective and from a buying fish perspective.
Yeah, and buying and selling.
What should I breed?
Yeah.
I've gotten the phone call a number of times, sometimes from budding young hobbyists, sometimes from get-rich-quick schemers. Hey, I can breed fish for you. What should I breed? Or let me say it a different way. Hey, so I'm looking to really get into breeding fish and I'm just hoping I can sell them somewhere. Will you guys buy fish? And all kinds of different versions of that question.
Yeah. The question for me is often, what are you guys always looking for more of? And my answer is usually, you're going to be disappointed in my answers.
Right.
It's bristlenose plecos and angelfish. And that's pretty much it.
Pretty much. Yeah. So why is it that we can't say to someone, hey, if you breed this, we'll buy them from you? There's a couple of reasons I have in mind, but I want to hear what you guys have to say.
A big part of that is practically a single breeder is more than capable of producing more fish of most species than we're capable of selling.
Yeah.
That's a contributing factor.
For me, the factor is, and this is like one of the most, I don't want to say like humbling realizations, but like as somebody who's bringing in a lot of fish to sell, not everybody's interested in what you're interested in. The amount of times you brought in something like, everybody's going to think this is super cool and I'm really excited about it. And it sits in the tank for a few months.
Wild betta guy, that is something that I contend with on a daily basis. And I say that empathetically to anyone listening, that we're not trying to belittle that specific niche that you love.
Not
we encourage that and we love that part of the hobby, but also acknowledge the fact, like I had to the hard way, that doesn't translate to ability to sell it.
Right. And because like you hinted at earlier, because if you are truly breeding fish as a production, you're going to produce more than the demand is going to be for it.
We've kind of thought about that here too, right?
Right.
We know we have, if you've been to our store, you've seen or heard about the infamous basement facility that we have down there. And we get asked that question all the time. Do you guys breed fish? And we set up a little breeding area, but we don't call it a production area. We actually call it the breeding lab. And it's about learning.
Yeah.
And trying and experimenting and coming up with different ways to talk to people about breeding fish, not necessarily so we can produce fish to sell here. We'll do a little bit of that.
Yeah.
It's way easier to walk through talking through someone how to breed a fish when I can say, all right, so this is what's worked for me.
Right.
Yeah.
This is what didn't work for me.
Yeah.
But I think the flip side of saying nobody wants your fish, which is not what I want to say, is... And this is even like a little bit of a cultural soapbox for me, is like we've sort of gotten into this like hustle culture. Like everything you do needs to work for you, needs to make you money, needs to be valuable, needs to be this use of your time that's going to come back to you and give you some return other than the joy you get doing it. And it's enough just to get joy from it.
Yeah, that's a purposeful decision in my fish breeding. So I tell people that if you're breeding to make money versus just to have fun, your goals are going to be very different than the way I breed, because right. I'm going to ask Ben, the last batch of Betta Unimaculata I bred, how many did I bring in?
Seven.
Brought in two.
Two. Yeah. No, you're thinking of the batch we just got out of the fish. He brought in two specimens from his last brood before he brought them in.
Yep. Right. The point of that was it just was a brood that I called the crap out of. Because I'm not in it to make money. So I'm the word ruthless is apt, but I do it because I want them to be the best versions of that fish. I think that someone that's investing in a Betta Unimaculata Sangata with a known collection location deserves a fish that is the best version of that fish.
Yeah.
That's a great example for this discussion, generally speaking, I'd say, because it's we have them for sale for $39.99. Mm-hmm. It's a specialty fish that doesn't fit in many tanks and is pretty nerdy and not that available. You know, it's worth the price that it fetches, but there are only a few people willing to pay that price and who can take the fish. So that's a pretty good example for us to be like using in this discussion.
Yeah. So somebody's then gonna, you know, come into the store and say, wait, that's a male and a female Betta Unimaculata. Those fish are $40 a piece. If I can produce like 30 or 40 of those a month, man, I'd be rich.
Yeah.
but who would you sell those to?
Right.
And
where?
Even if you were going to sell them wholesale, we'll get into what we would pay for them wholesale at some point in this discussion. Stay tuned. But even if you were going to sell them wholesale at a price that we would consider a reasonable wholesale price, we sell about five or six of those a month.
On a good month.
On a good
month. If we're really pushing them.
Right.
Let's keep in mind that like the one time we sold an entire shipment within a month that came in, it's because I bought 75% of that shipment myself.
I bought the other 25.
Okay, so let's change the example a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a really popular fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow labs.
Yeah.
Libidochromis ceruleus.
That's a fish that we probably sell 20 to 30 of every month at
every
least.
Month. Yes.
Yeah.
So if you are doing an okay job breeding yellow labs, they're going to breed for you about every 2-3 weeks, 30 to 50 fish.
Yeah.
We sell 25 a month on a good month.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with them?
Also, this is where I'm going to jump in and say, where are you going to keep them before you sell them? Because you need to sell them, grow them to be large enough to sell.
Yeah, 1.5 to 2 inches.
And so now all of a sudden your display tank that has 10 fish in it has 40.
Or you're going to... So one thing to keep in mind is generally the math, and this is general. Generally the math works out is however many months you need to grow a fish to sell it, you are going to need that many grow out tanks for each pair you have of that species. So let's stick with the yellow labs. You have one pair and you want to be a consistent breeder of it for whatever reason, good for you. And they take probably like 4 months to reach that size, give or take.
I think that's reasonable.
So then you're going to need a fry tank and then 4 grow out tanks in addition to your breeding pair tank.
For just producing yellow labs.
Yes.
You are going to get so sick of yellow labs in about 3 months, you're just going to be done with them.
And that's why I have never tried to breed things to make money, because that sounds the exact opposite of what I want to do with my fish room.
And so then when you get bored with yellow labs and you've come up with this consistent source for yellow labs of a couple of stores that are going to buy your yellow labs, you're bored with them and then you're done with them and now you're not a consistent source anymore.
And you're not making any money.
You're not making any money. And what stores need is consistent sources.
Yeah. Yeah. If we don't have somebody who has the same thing every month, then, you know, we're not going to track you down to try and get yellow labs off of you. We're going we're going to order from a wholesaler because we need fish.
We need them now.
Yeah.
You know how much of a unicorn it is to find an individual that will call us once a month and say, hey, how you doing on Bristol Nose Plecos? Hey, how you doing on Celestial Pearl Daniels?
Right.
Well, and that's the thing. that's probably, I think Bristlenose Pleco is, I brought up angelfish too, but there are specific reasons for angelfish. That's probably the fish we sell the most of because they fit in.
Of an individual, yeah, this species.
At least to the most tanks. I mean, quantity wise, yeah, like schooling fish we probably sell more of, but like the majority of tanks could use a Bristlenose Pleco, mm-hmm, and those are fish that we only get from local breeders.
True.
So that's probably our biggest market that we are in for fish.
I think we've got 4 or 5 different breeders though that it takes to keep us
Yeah, and sometimes we don't get them.
Right.
So
and we're breeding them in house even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not keeping up with our demand.
Right.
Yeah, but none of those are consistent suppliers, so we wait and see, but there are enough people breeding them that works.
I cannot tell you how hard we looked for a consistent source of any strain of Neocaridina shrimp, yeah, from a local breeder, to the point where we got so tired of waiting for that Amy set up a bunch of 10 gallons so that we can do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the only production breeding groups we're going to do.
Yeah.
No. Those and maybe some killies, because we can control the...
And maybe some other invertebrates that it's just almost easier to breed than it is to get, mm-hmm, you know? But... And consistency, right? We'd have people who would set up a colony and breed it and, you know, not cross anything into it. And that colony crashes within a few months and they're like, oh, well, we'll start it up again. And then we lose track of it. So I would say shrimp is probably one of the only things that you can actually make money on.
I would argue if you can keep a consistent line of guppies going,
yeah,
you could probably do really good with a lot of those lines because there's always demand for specific strains of guppies.
But guppies, you can flood the market too easily.
That's true.
You know, if consistent production does. Yeah. If somebody's coming up with, let's just say those cool red flamingo guppies we get in on occasion, they're going to be producing 50 to 100 of those every month.
Here's my counter argument to that, okay, though. If you're calling that line to maintain it properly, that's not going to be a problem.
And the value goes up too.
Culling. Ooh, culling is a harsh one.
It is hard. I mean, you've already talked about it a little bit, but quality of the fish that you're breeding is an important part of how much we're willing to give for it.
Every breeder should have a pair of pike cichlids.
You just think everyone should have a pair of pike That's cichlids. True. That's not fair.
he's right, but A, because they're cool, but B, it always works. It's easier for most people to have a pair of fish that if you're not willing to raise something, a live food source for something like a pike cichlid, is you're going to have to feed it something.
I wonder how many of our listeners just went, I just figured out what they're talking about. They're going to kill the fish. Yes, that's culling.
It's one of the sad truths, but it's so important.
I know we've talked about it in another podcast, but since it's relevant here, I'm going to say it again. A lot of the time people will talk about, oh man, like electric blue rams aren't as hardy as they used to be. And I said, yeah, because that's a line that isn't culled properly.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely true. And really, if culling is that, I don't know, scary to you, having a separate tank that you're not using for breeding that you put those fish in is possible, but then you're just raising a bunch of sad fish for their whole lives.
Right. Anyone questioning the ethics of culling, nature is the greatest color of all.
Absolutely.
Nature is far more harsh than I am.
Far more harsh. Far more harsh.
Well, and it's so relevant because I just posted that video about genetic drift. And those little changes in a population as small as the aquarium hobby, because the fish that we have in captivity, we can consider a population.
Sure.
Letting those genetics into it, they're going somewhere, you know? Like, that's just something that can affect all of the fish we have in the hobby.
Yeah.
Right. Ooh, in the last, I'm picking on Yellow Labs a lot. And okay, so first I need to do a little disclaimer here because we're being really negative about,
yeah,
you know, should you breed fish and trade them into stores? Please.
Yes, please.
Please.
We're always happy to get a local source of something.
Yes.
Well,
but be realistic about it.
Here's the fun alternative, right? I have a community tank. I have buffalo head cichlids. I have some tetras that work great for culling very young fry that don't compete. And those cichlids breed, and I probably have 20 buffalo head cichlid fry in that tank, which for them would be a smaller than usual yield. Mm-hmm. But those 20 will grow up, and I can trade them in here. And very few people want buffalo head cichlids, but that's enough for like us to get a batch.
Yeah.
And I probably won't have another one for a month or two, and those probably won't be big enough to sell for a month or two. And so, yeah, I don't have too many fish. I have the ones that are breeding at the rate that they're breeding, and it's fun.
It gives you that feeling that, you know, a lot of people don't want to spend $50, $80, or $100 on a single species of freshwater fish.
Yeah.
But if you go breed a bunch of buffalo heads, and now all of a sudden you have this monopoly money you get to play with,
yeah,
suddenly that $50, $60 pair of fish, mm-hmm, might as well go for it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's, I think it's a great way to look at your intention of breeding.
And that's another thing to keep in mind. If you are especially looking to breed for money, invest in good brood stock.
Yeah.
Because,
oh man, yeah.
Because the amount of money that you're investing in directly correlates to what you're going to be able to get out of it. But also, like, I'm trying to do the math very quickly in my head. If you spend like X amount of money, and think about if you're breeding this fish for, let's say, 5 years. Mm-hmm. That works out to, let's say you spend like $100 on it. That works out to like less than a penny a day.
Yeah, that's cheap entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't think it's worthwhile necessarily, because that's what we were just talking about. You're not going to pay your rent breeding fish, mm-hmm, but you can fund your hobby.
Or at least supplement.
Yeah, at least absolutely get, yeah, you to, sure, the next level, you know, get that one thing you've been dreaming of.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that you don't think that you want to spend money on. Mm-hmm. That to me is enough. Like, that's awesome.
See, I'm so different than you, but it's comical. So I'll trade in fish, and then I will use the, like, a lot of that credit. That's the word, credit.
Credit. Yeah.
To get like treats for those fish, because I'm like, oh, they did so good.
Yeah, but it still fuels your hobby.
Yep.
Yeah. 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 Like, you're putting it back in, and it's money you've already invested that you're just putting back into it.
Yep.
So Charles touched on two points about me continuing to pick on Yellow Labs again, mm-hmm, right? And it was good brood stock and culling. The last four times somebody tried, the last four times somebody tried or successfully traded in Yellow Labs.
They weren't Yellow Labs?
They weren't true Yellow Labs. They were hybrids.
Boom, 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 boom,
boom, boom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we ended up actually with about a half a dozen Yellow Lab hybrids because I missed it. I didn't notice the stripes until after we had them. If you're breeding fish, keep species tanks.
Yeah.
Also, know where you got them from. Yeah,
know where you got them from. And African cichlids, every single Malawi cichlid will breed with any other Malawi cichlid, if there's no other option, or maybe even if there are,
you know,
that is a blanket statement. If you keep,
that's a huge statement. Is that really true?
Absolutely true.
100% true.
100%.
How many species of Malawi cichlids are there?
Like
840.
Yeah.
But one thing to keep in mind is that all of those species originated from a common ancestor in the last 10,000 years.
So I'll even take it one step further. There are a number of very well-educated, prominent cichlid scientists, I don't use the word scientists lightly, who will say you could hybridize any cichlid with any other cichlid.
That's a really scary statement.
It's absolutely true. Now, when we go to Malawi cichlids, it's not that you can, it's that they will.
Right.
Right. You could probably encourage a lot of other species to hybridize when it comes to cichlids.
Don't tell them that.
It's a bad idea. Don't do it. But Malawi cichlids, an OB peacock is a peacock that mated with an Mbuna.
Right.
And that's the only hybrid that people ever like with cichlids.
That's the only hybrid that's worth any money anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, dragon's blood is a hybrid.
Well, I
would throw that in the same, I mean, almost in the same category as the OB. It's not a hybrid with an Mbuna, is it? It's a hybrid with other peacocks?
No,
I don't care. I don't care. Right. Let's move on from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyways.
The amount of times that we see, if you keep a mixed African cichlid tank, you should cull every single fry you produce.
Yeah. If, well,
that's a big, that's a.
Let's get into numbers, right? Pure yellow lab cichlid fry, 2 inches long. What do we give for that?
Couple of bucks.
Okay. Hybridized with anything else?
Zero.
Zero. Right. It's that simple. Nobody wants those.
Nope.
Nobody should.
Nobody should.
Yeah.
Yeah. We might need some bigger pike cichlids.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
And it's because we're trying to maintain populations in captivity that are true. It's important.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Especially as a business that is at a crux of like handing, I don't want to say handing out, but basically facilitating the movement of these fish through tanks, mm-hmm. through what basically the aquarium hobby would be classed in population genetics as a meta population, where there are a bunch of smaller pocket populations mm-hmm. that are occasionally interchanging between each other. And as a place where that happens, we need to be conscientious of that and be careful what's being passed around, at least through us.
It's so fascinating.
Yeah.
So what else? Like, worth, what? Where
value,
do we get
cost,
that?
Cost, price.
We mentioned the zebra pleco example. That's probably a pretty good one to talk about a little bit. The high value, low demand.
High value, low demand. Zebra plecos, better macrostoma. Those are the only two that I can put into that category.
You can see zebra plecos for sale in stores for $250.
If you're easily lucky.
Yeah. And you think, okay, well, I can spend $500. And in my first brood, breeding zebra plecos, which is super easy. Look it up. It's very easy.
Yeah.
Not so much.
Not so much.
Maybe you'll get a dozen, but you can sell all of those for $250, right?
Because there are so many people that are ready to shell out $250 for a freshwater fish. Because that happens all the time.
Okay, it doesn't, by the way. I'm going. He's 100% right. I'm going to ignore that and make an assumption. Let's assume you can pull off selling each of those for retail value and all of them.
Okay, I'll run with it.
Yeah, that's a big stretch already.
Listen,
yeah.
What would it take for a hobbyist to do that? And I've thought this out, and let me give you the answer.
Okay.
You need to be willing to ship them. You need to be willing to deal with the time it takes for you to ship that thing properly. And you need to be willing to deal with the fact that if there's dead on arrival, you're going to be dealing with someone who's mad that they spent $250 on a fish, and you have to make it right.
And most likely, just be out that money.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all things that if you want to sell retail value and sell all of your fish at retail value, you need to be comfortable doing.
Yeah, I would say that, like, in terms of the country, we probably have, I mean, we have a decent amount of aquarium stores. We have mm-hmm. 5 around that could take trade-in fish, you know, within an hour or so.
Yeah.
We would probably take 1 or 2 of those plecos. Maybe all of those places, if you're lucky, will take 1 or 2. So yeah, you're going to be shipping.
but then you just introduced another fantastic problem. If every store in town has zebra plecos, how many people in Grand Rapids are going to buy zebra plecos? Because with a fish like that, if someone came in and talked to me and saying, yeah, I just sold 2 to store X and 2 to store Y. Do you want to buy 2? No.
And
not with a fish like that.
Yeah.
Well, and
if it's a regularly sold tetra, if it's Corydoras pygmaeus or even Columbia zebra plecos, the cheaper ones or bristlenose, maybe.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you just flooded the market with a low demand fish, and that means that each store is probably going to be sitting on those fish for possibly years now.
Yeah. And then we're gonna get somebody who's gonna, hey, this store down the street was going to sell one of these for $249.99. You have yours at $259.99. Will you match their price? Hey, beat by $10, I'll buy yours instead of theirs. You know, and all of that stuff All of that stuff is going to happen.
Yeah.
We're being a little hard on the hobby today.
I know.
Maybe we need to do that every once in a while, though. Maybe that's not...
Maybe we need to reverse it, though, and talk about why you should be breeding.
Yeah, I purposely brought up that... I will admit, I was the one that brought up this topic to these guys and pitched it. But I brought it up because I felt like this was a topic that a lot of people needed a reality check on. Because as a person who breeds for fun and purposely breeds for fun because I don't like the reality of breeding for money, I think a lot of people need to think about these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can make money at it with enough volume, enough energy, and shipping. That's like the only way. I can't think of a way to do it locally.
And even then, you're going to have razor-thin margins.
And a lot of competition.
And a lot of challenge. Shipping is a pain in the butt.
Yeah. So if you're determined, but you can't do it as a casual lark.
Yeah. Maybe this is a good caveat, a good maybe a feel-good. Yes, breed fish.
Do it.
Yes.
Everyone needs to be breeding.
We will buy some of them. We will be glad. We love buying from local breeders.
Yeah.
But you got to be realistic about it.
Yeah.
If you're seeing bristlenose plecos for $11.99, you're not going to get $11.99 for it.
No.
So is it time to reveal that? What's the magic numbers?
Well, yeah, there is. It's pretty much an industry standard wholesale cost to retail cost markup. I mean, that's not us saying anything about us that we're revealing. It's just like there's an industry standard for this.
Industry standards are 3 to 5 times.
Yeah.
A 3 to 5 times markup. There's a bunch of people going, holy crap, man, they buy that fish for such a cheap price. And they're ripping us off. I hear that all the time. I bought this and I got ripped off.
But one of the things that people like that don't keep in mind is, A, we're a business. We cannot be here if we cannot pay our bills.
Right.
These are living things. Sometimes they die. We have to feed them. We have to give them clean water. We need to keep them heated. We need to et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have all this overhead in making sure that $2 fish stays alive.
The amount of money we spent on that neon tetra that we're selling for $3.99.
Well, we are probably even more of a dramatic example of this because we quarantine everything.
Right.
Everything that we get needs to pay rent for at least 2 to 4 weeks. That's mm-hmm. how long we quarantine. Mm-hmm. But our markup isn't higher than the industry standard.
I think that's a good call out to other stores that guess what? We do have the model for, you can do this and do it right.
Yeah. They say, oh, well, that won't make us any money. Well, I don't even need to like. It works.
It works. Yeah,
it works. Because the industry standard is that kind of markup. I mean, that's why we can do it, but what are other stores doing?
I think we only just talk about what we're doing. And what we're doing is here's the results of what we're doing, what it means to a hobbyist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, first what it means to us, because we know we're going to be taking care of that fish for a few weeks. We're not going to just slap it in a tank. We're going to take care of it from day one.
Yeah.
We're going to take better care of it from day one.
Because we have to.
We have to. We got 2 weeks that we have to, at least 2 weeks that we have to keep that fish alive.
Yeah.
When people buy our fish, I remember when I was new in the hobby, walking around to aquarium stores and looking at, so what's their guarantee?
Yeah.
Right? What's their guarantee if this fish dies? Almost assuming that was a good possibility. And I think that lots of stores assume that's a possibility, like mm-hmm. automatic replacement guarantee. The online sellers do that.
I guess that's probably, this isn't, I mean, it's hard not to make accusations,
right?
But like, I guess that's probably built into markup for the industry, as in some fish are going to come back. You're gonna have to pay out some
right.
this percentage of how many fish are lost. If you don't quarantine, then that's an assumption you have right. to make.
And I think as a result, I can think of 4 fish last year that we had credit.
Yeah,
maybe
it doesn't,
6.
It doesn't happen very often. Usually it's we'll work with them and figure out what went wrong in the right. tank. You know, right. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think that's a change that's got to happen. On the industry level.
Yeah.
For me, like the amount of time I spend making sure a fish is healthy so that when it comes upstairs, it sells.
Side note, Charles is the quarantine specialist.
Yes.
I'm smiling.
That's kind of his job.
I was like, I'm smiling behind the mic, but I'm only explaining it because I'm like, no one can see what I'm doing. Yeah, it's a big incentive for me to make sure that fish is going to a place that can support it, because if for saltwater fish in particular, because I spend a full month with that fish, getting to know it, learning its quirks, learning what it does like to eat, what it doesn't like to eat. And then I'm going to dramatize it a little bit just to be funny. But like there is a situation where someone's like, can I have this? And I'm like, no, I didn't spend a month for you to kill it.
Like, I mean, yeah, but that is like the mindset shift that we're trying to push, right? Those losses, the buck doesn't get passed to the next step. And, you know, well, they'll die in somebody else's care and some of those people aren't going to bother to bring them back, you know?
Yeah. I think it's one of the strongest points of example for that are those fish that we know don't survive in captivity, like the obligatory corallivores. When you see those for sale in a, we're going to call it a, if they have those for sale, a less than reputable aquarium store, the people that have that fish for sale know that fish is going to die. The people selling it know that.
Or if they don't, that's a way worse problem.
Yeah, that's probably true. Okay. Most of them know that.
Yeah.
But the mentality is, as long as it doesn't die in my store, at least I made the money on it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. The mentality we take, the mentality we think is really the right one, we have a responsibility to that life and a responsibility to that customer to say, we are selling you this fish and we are really confident it's going to live out its natural lifespan in your aquarium. That's the goal. That's how it should be.
I think like this is a little bit of a tangent, but it's so important to realizing why your fish cost what they do, because part of why your fish cost what they do built in is losses.
Right.
Yeah. So.
So we took the loss out and included the care.
Right. Like the amount of time for Charles to spend on an individual neon tetra, which is, I don't know, 10 minutes of his time, you know, if you split it up, whatever. Like the cost is similar. Yeah. Time versus deaths. And I would much rather spend time than lives.
Right. Especially when you think about how many people get it out of the hobby because they're like, I can't keep anything alive. And I am, the longer I've been here, the more confident I am in saying, I think it's just that you were given bad fish, not that you're a bad fish keeper.
I cannot disagree with that statement.
More often than not, people are like, I'm overwhelmed by the dedication of most of our customers. Mm-hmm. More people are doing research and trying to do things right and trying to listen to advice than not, I would say, the people that we get through our doors. And if you look at the perspective of the whole hobby as a whole, that's not the impression I think most people have. But the customers want better.
And they deserve better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is true that you can go to a big box store and possibly some mom and pops and spend $1.99 for a neon tetra.
Yeah.
Our neon tetras are more expensive than that.
That's true.
Yes. But if you spend $1.99 on a neon tetra, you get 10 of them and you lose half of them.
Did you really save money?
Our neon tetras were the same price, only nothing died.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. But even beyond like death and loss and time spent in our facility, the fish don't start here. They start in the wild oftentimes. So some guy's got to go out in the wild and scoop it up.
Or some girl.
Or some company. Or some... Oh, girls are guys. It's fine. this is the Midwest. We're all used guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Used guys.
somebody has to go and scoop it, or some company or some group of people.
Right.
They have to hold it for some amount of time, maybe only a couple of days. They have to bag it up. They have to ship it out to a facility. That facility keeps it probably for a little amount of time, but not a lot. But it still takes
a few
space.
Weeks, actually.
Yeah, in our wholesalers for sure. Hopefully,
actually,
in all.
in the distributors coming out of the Amazon River.
Okay. Yep. So I guess I'm even skipping a step because they go from the person who catches it to a distributor, who then ships it to a domestic wholesaler, mm-hmm. who then keeps it for some amount of time, mm-hmm. and then ships it to us. So
we do work with one of the very few wholesalers that also quarantines.
Yes.
So our freshwater fish are double quarantined.
Yeah. And it's such an opportunity for us to be able to do. Yeah. But you're paying every person in that chain, and there's a lot of people.
Right. It's amazing to me the difference in the reactions on people's faces when we tell people we quarantine. And it's either one or the other. There's no in between. Either somebody walks in and goes, "You what? You quarantine for us? Holy cow." Or they go, "What do you mean you got to wait 2 weeks for a fish?" And it's one of the two.
Yeah.
It was a long time. Here's one of the trends in the hobbies that I think needs to be bucked. It has been a long time thing that hobbyists find out what day stores get their new fish in, mm-hmm. so they can rush out and buy them. And I get that draw. I remember that draw. I remember learning what fish days were.
Yeah.
I never partook of that.
I totally did. They were getting the new stuff in. That was the time to be there, because so you didn't miss out on anything.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know what to say about it.
I know.
Like, but it's so much fun. Like,
it
how
is.
Do we, I
it
guess
is.
We can recreate that feeling by putting out the unboxing videos. You know, we've been doing that a lot. Of like, you get to see what's coming out, and you get to put it on hold.
Right.
That's pretty fun.
And then we always have new crazy stuff in here. And I mean, we don't always have the same stuff. So that it's likely you're going to come in and see new stuff.
Yeah.
And we always try to get something weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we got to keep ourselves entertained.
The question that we always have when we're going through the lists is we add up everything that we want to order, and we have to weigh against what we can sell and what we want.
I seem to recall the last time we were looking at a list. I'm not going to say what X and Y were, but we were like, we can sell X, but Y is cool. And then I said, well, maybe people need to stop being wrong.
Yeah, you're not lying there. I think that's why we do our top five underrated fish and trying to change that mentality. So let's get back to our hobbyists and talk about the hobbyists that are thinking about breeding some fish, and you want to sell it to a store. Value. How much do I get for these fish? here's what it's based on. First, and this is the straight up, how much can we get it for somewhere else? We know our wholesaler. We know that if we get yellow labs from our wholesaler, they're going to be true. They're mm-hmm. going to be pure. They're going to be exactly what we want.
I.e., when we're buying from you, we are taking a risk because we don't know you.
Yeah. Well, and frankly, we know they're going to be healthy. We know that, like, we know that they're going to have a good lineage. We know that they're going to have. So, I mean, I always prefer to buy from local breeders. I want to support that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But
here's why. If we sell a yellow lab, a 1.5-inch, 2-inch yellow lab, I don't know why I'm picking on yellow labs, because we don't really sell that many African cichlids. It's not our niche.
It's not our thing, but it's an easy breeder.
It is.
That's
an easy
a good
breeder.
Example. Yeah.
And we get offered yellow labs all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where was I going with that? So, okay. How are we going to value that? So first, if we can buy a yellow lab from our wholesaler for cheaper than we can buy it from you, there's got to be a good reason for us to buy them. It's not saying that we're not going to, but there's got to be a really good reason for it.
And usually it's just that they're bigger.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. I mean, size, that's the main thing. Mm-hmm. Some people who breed are a little bit like panicked about it. Like, oh, I've got all these fish now in my display. I don't know what to do. Let me trade them in. And for casual fish breeding, that can be one of the big difficulties, is you've got to commit to it and grow them out if you want to get money for them.
Yeah. 3/4 of an inch yellow lab, we have to grow out.
Yeah.
Which means now the 2 weeks that Charles would put into that yellow lab to make sure it's healthy, he also has to put in another 3 or 4 weeks into just plain getting it big enough to be saleable.
Yeah, and they have to pay rent.
They have to pay rent. And
everything does.
When they're that size, not all of them are going to get, they're not all going to grow up.
Right.
Some are going to go down the filter. Some are going to get beat up. Some are just going to be weak. Some are going to have eyeballs in the wrong places.
Yeah.
He'll have to do the culling is the better way to say
right.
that.
But. Which I have had to do for shipments that come in.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you trade them in at 2 inches, now we know what they're going to grow up to look like. We know what kind of quality they are. We know if they're hybrids or not, and we're willing to give a little bit more for them.
Also, one thing to keep in mind is that like a compelling reason for us could be you have a known collection location.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yes.
Because especially with African cichlids, those can be hard to come by.
Yeah, a lot of people don't think that tracking the history of their fish is important, but for us, that is a big sell.
It's abundantly important. Yellow labs are an interesting one for me to continue to pick on when it comes to collection location, because in 1984, there were, I believe it was 4 pairs of yellow labs exported from Lake Malawi. That pretty much introduced all of the yellow labs that made it into North America.
I'm aware. Yeah, I was like, I'm aware of a second influx, but that was like 20 years later, and I think it was
2002.
Yeah. That was like 2 or 3 pairs. It wasn't I mean, compared to 4, it was a big deal, but it wasn't a lot.
Yeah. I remember seeing a lot of yellow labs in stores before 2002. By the way, Ad Konings told me a funny statistic about yellow labs. There are more of them in the aquarium hobby than there are in Lake Malawi.
I would believe that for
a lot. It's a rare fish in Lake Malawi.
That's so funny.
Yeah. One of the most common African cichlids in the hobby, and it's extremely rare.
What would be considered a common African cichlid in Lake Malawi?
A lot of the zebras are a lot more common.
Okay. Just curious. Yeah.
Metroclima asterae.
Okay. That's the red, right? The orange red. The orange one that's red that's orange. Yeah.
But that's just going to be in a particular locale. I mean, it's Lake Malawi, and there's 840 different species of cichlids in Lake Malawi, and that's because they're not all spread out all over the whole lake.
Right. I guess Charles's bettas are probably a better example for collection location because they do have one.
Yeah.
So those are the betta unimaculata from Sangatta.
Yeah.
And he traded in those two. Let's say they turn out to be a pair, and we sell them to somebody else as betta unimaculata Sangatta. And that person decides that they don't care about that Sangatta. They're going to sell them to somebody else as Betta Unimaculata. And wherever they sell them next has a different Betta Unimaculata that's not from Sangatta.
Which is a big deal because genetics and bettas are being reshuffled as we know them better. So you could be unintentionally creating a hybrid.
Exactly. If they bred those two together, now they have a whole new fish.
Yeah.
It's very, very likely. I'm not even saying possible. I'm saying likely that a different collection location of Unimaculata could very soon be a different species.
It could even very soon be a different genus as far as we know.
Or like killifish people know this better than basically any other niche in the hobby where they keep track of collection location, date it was collected and by whom. And because they're aware of stuff like that. And let me tell you, I'm waiting for the day that we can get in a known collection location with like collection date and stuff like that for killifish in here.
We got to send you to the Killy Carnival.
I know.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to explode.
It's a pretty cool event.
That's awesome.
Okay. So let's bottom line it for the hobbyists, right?
Sure.
Like, so when you come in and say, hey, I want to sell this fish to you, how much are you going to give me? We're going to say 20 to 50% of retail value in store credit. If you want more than that, you have to sell at retail. So if you're going to a store and that's what they say and you don't like the price, they're not trying to rip you off. That's how they can make money and that's what they're there for. And you want them to be there to make money because you want them to stick around.
Yeah, well, and one thing to keep in mind when it's like, we need to make money on it, as in that fish needs to pay rent. like we're going back to Amy's example, it can't just take up space in our basement or wherever.
Yeah. That's what our good wholesalers are doing, though. Our good wholesalers are saying, how can we help you stay in business?
Right.
Right. That's what somebody selling fish to us has to remember. We are not buying fish from you because you're a customer. We are now your customer.
Right.
We are buying fish from you so that we can make money. You want to sell us fish, and you want to do this as the seller. You want to sell us fish that we can make money on. If we pay too much for it, we can't make money on it. If it's not in good condition, we can't make money on it. If it's too small, we can't make money on it. If its eyes are not where they're supposed to be, we can't make money on it. If it's a hybrid, we can't make money on it. You want us to make money on it so we can stick around and buy more fish from you. We want you to sell us good fish so that you keep producing good fish and supplying us with good fish.
And we want to support you in that too.
Right.
You know, so, but as long as you're doing what you need to do with it to keep us selling them.
Yep.
If you don't give us something we can sell, we can't support you.
So here's the positive side of that. And this is if you're looking for store credit, sometimes we'll give up to 50% retail value.
If we really want it.
If we know we can make money on it. If we have 40 of them in the basement, we can't give you 50% of retail value. If we have a wholesaler that always has them in stock and they're amazing, we can't give you 50% of retail value. It's got to be a really exceptional fish to do that. Most of the time, it's going to be 20 to 25% of retail value. That's what they're worth.
Policy up until this point, we'll see, maybe this conversation will change that, has been, we'll take anything.
We will.
And we'll decide what we can give you. Yes. And you can decide if you want to give them to us or not.
Don't
and sometimes it's nothing.
Right.
But we can take them. So if you're breeding for fun, do it.
Yeah.
And drop them off. But know that we need to price them at what we can sell them for.
Yep.
And that's how I breed, because I breed for fun. And sometimes I just bring in stuff because I'm like, I just want room in my tank. And I accept the fact that I have zero negotiating power in what I'm getting out of it. And I'm okay with that because it's my hobby. It's not like I work here as a business, but what I do in my fish room at home, that is purposely not my business. So that stays fun for me.
That's how you keep it fun. If you try to make a business, speaking from personal experience, sometimes it's just not going
to
be fun.
And you have to separate the hobby from the business.
Yeah.
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 I do.
So what do we do with all those hybrids when they show up? Well, we are in a unique position that we can still take hybrids. Sometimes we have to call them. Sometimes we don't. We have a number of service accounts that we can just throw a bunch of cichlids in, and it's just a bunch of pretty fish, and they're fine.
Yeah, we don't call trade-ins unless we're forced to. Even, right. I mean, we get common plecos constantly.
Constant.
It needs to be an egregiously sick or something's deformed wrong with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
This might be a good point because we are 48 minutes into this right now.
Yeah.
To plug clubs. If your question is, I want to breed, what do I do with them?
I love BAP programs and clubs.
Yes. Let's talk about that some because that's fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
So as many of you know, and we've talked about it before, the Grand Valley Aquarium Club is our local aquarium club. And they have this really cool competition program called the BAP program, which is the Breeders Award Program. It's where you can get points, which are way more valuable than dollars because points are bragging rights.
Mm-hmm. Points are how you show you're better than other people.
And points are fun. So what the Grand Valley Aquarium Club does, which is there's some variation of this depending on what club you are a member of, is every year there's a Breeders Award competition for Breeder of the Year. And you breed as many different species as you can. And oh, by the way, they all have to be species you've never turned in before for points. And whoever breeds the most different species gets the points and gets the award. You have to sell those fish at the monthly auctions. Now, right now, that's on hold for a little while because there are no monthly auctions, and they just came out with a really good program to try to still encourage some of that breeding to happen. But on a typical year, produce 6 fry that are 60 days old, sell them at the auction, and you get your point. You still get some of the money from selling them at the auction. The club takes its 30% because the club has to make some money to stick around to keep on doing what they're doing. But you get to walk away with a little bit of cash and you get to walk away with some breeding rights. So if you're breeding those fish, and oh, by the way, you can bring them a lot more than just 6. People will buy them.
You can also bring them if you're not babbing them.
Yeah. Yeah. Sell them at your clubs. Yeah. Support the clubs.
Are not so many monthly auctions.
I know.
Not so many auctions.
Oh, and that club, like their passion for it, they're not many at all. There's a ton of stuff that goes through there because those people just love to breed and they might not be making money on them.
As someone who, not so regularly anymore, but has regularly auctioneered, those auctions can be exhausting.
I bet.
Yep. It's a great place to sell fish. Not to discourage you from bringing some fish in here to sell, but if you're looking for different outlets for selling your fish, man, those aquarium clubs are great. And there are some people that bring in 2 bags of angels every single month.
Mm-hmm. And they're probably not making bank on those angels, but
it depends on the month.
Yeah,
you know?
It depends on the month. You bring in something crazy and rare, you might make something the first month. You might make something the second month. You might make something the third month. And in the fourth month, everybody has them and you make a dollar.
Right.
A dollar's a dollar, okay?
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. But those fish found a home and you got to breed fish and you got to find a home for them.
And they go through the club and everybody gets to enjoy them. You know, they get passed around. If everybody's breeding them, then you're all sharing tips and then you can move on to the next thing if you get sick and tired of it.
See, that's the essence of like what I enjoy about breeding fish, because I love the idea that like, there's more of this thing I like in the world, mm-hmm. and that it's like in someone else's home and they're enjoying it as much as I enjoy it in my home.
Right. It's a great way to distribute fish to the hobby.
Yeah, that's amazing. Especially if they're fish that, you know, might be in habitats that are threatened.
This is where I pop the bubble though. I don't really like BAP programs.
Really?
I think they encourage, I don't think they encourage innovation. I think they encourage people to try and breed as many species instead of trying to breed for conservation. So this is where I say, I don't hate BIPs, but that's not how I breed.
Yeah.
So the CARES program at the club, that's what I like. Mm. So I'm going to plug the CARES program for the club.
Why not both?
Plug it away.
So that program works more about like, so these are fish that are known to have, they're threatened, they're endangered, they're whatever. And so instead of having to only turn it in once to get points, you can turn it in multiple times and get points each time, because what you're doing is increasing the captive population size of this endangered fish. And that hasn't quite caught on in the club yet, and I want it to. So like at any given time in the store, feel free, if you walk in and ask me, what's in the store that's on the CARES program? I will go through tank by tank.
It'll be a lot more than you think, actually.
Yes. And that's how I think breeding should be. Not that that's actually, rephrase that. That's how I like to breed.
I totally get it. I totally get both sides. In fact, I'll say it this way. I'm really glad there are people that think the way that you do. And I'm really glad there are people that want to just breed as many fish as possible.
This is,
and I'll say it because of this. The innovation I see in coming up with funky ideas to try to breed as many fish as possible is pretty darn cool.
It is fun. And it's paid off on care species too. Like people who have found the perfect way to breed zebra danios affect how we're going to breed those fancy Hillstream danios we have downstairs.
That's true, and I will admit that, and this is where the part I say, that's why I'm happy we have a club as big as and as awesome as the Grand Valley Aquarium Club, because we have enough room for BAP people and CARES people.
Fantastic. So
and enough room for people who are both, by the way, because I think a lot of people do get the taste and are like, ooh, what are the easiest things we can breed? And then like churn through a whole bunch of those, and then they're like, and now what? And I think for some people, that's where the CARES stuff comes
in. That's one of the really cool ways the Grand Valley Aquarium Club's BAP system is set up, where you can churn through easy breeders and get those points. For Breeder of the Year, the experienced breeders have already bred zebra danios, guppies, and yellow labs.
Right.
Right? So a new breeder can still win Breeder of the Year because it's one fish, one point. Whether you just bred something no one has ever bred before or you just bred zebra danios for the first time.
Yeah.
It's one fish, one point.
Yeah.
It's cumulative. So there is also those members of the club that have bred 200, 300, 400 different species. And those guys get their bragging rights. Those people get their bragging rights as well. But for that Breeder of the Year competition, rookies can get involved. And I can think of at least 3 years in a row, not in a row. I can think of at least three different years where Rookie of the Year, which is an award, if you haven't ever been involved in the BAP program and then all of a sudden you get involved and you breed more than anybody else that just got involved in the program, that's Rookie of the Year. And you can get that Rookie of the Year award. I can think of a number of occasions that Rookie of the Year also won Breeder of the Year.
Wow.
I've actually done the math on how to do it. I will never do it in a video and I will never talk about it in a podcast. But if you want to know how to do that, at least the way I would do it, come in the store and talk to me.
Oh my gosh. I wish more people would come into the store and say, this is my goal. I'm going to breed 30 fish by the end of this year, you know, or 50 fish.
Right. My record is 28.
And it's like, all right, well, let's start working on your plan. That's how I want to see it. That would be really fun.
I would love to help someone figure out how to do that in the space that they have.
Yeah.
So come in and talk to us about what you want to breed and how you think you could make money at it or be successful at it. Two very, very different things. Your definition of success. If you are listening to this podcast and you are in a region that does not have a local aquarium club, send me an email, get in contact with me, and I will help talk you through how to set up an aquarium club. I shouldn't say it that way. I will help with that, and the Grand Valley Aquarium Club would love to help model aquarium clubs in other regions. By the way, first thing to do is to see if you have one in your area, because there are hundreds all over the United States, all over the world.
And sometimes they're a little hard to find.
Right.
Yeah. And you can email podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com with questions like that, with any questions, with comments. Even if you don't have a local club, we'd love to collaborate with you because that's some of the most fun parts of this hobby.
How do you breed fish X? Want some input? We'll give it.
We'll give you any information we have at our disposal.
Yeah, we can't promise you results, but we can promise that we want you to succeed.
And we're going to have a lot of fun with it too.
Yes, absolutely.
And let me plug my, I feel the need to go back and elaborate on an idea that Amy touched on just a little bit.
Yeah.
She said that there's enough room for each individual to be a CARES and a BAP person. Even if you just set aside one tank with a CARES species and you just maintain that species and then all of your other tanks are BAP geared, that's an amazing fish room.
Yep. Yeah, you're making a difference. Like, honestly.
Are clown killies CARES species?
Ooh, I don't know.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up. Right. I don't know.
Well,
so many killies are.
I would be surprised if they're not.
Mm-hmm. If they're not, they probably should be.
I had to plug my all-time favorite fish, just so you all know. Yep. Well, hopefully this was some good information. We probably pissed some people off. We probably satisfied some people. We probably made some, maybe we even made some companies mad.
Good. I don't know.
Would be a good start.
If we made you mad, let us know.
Send us an email.
Send us an email.
Facebook message,
tell us,
let's
talk about it. That's something that's missing these days is talking about it. And I think that's why people leave frustrated sometimes because they didn't get enough money or didn't get what they wanted for a fish. It's because we don't talk about it enough.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the point here.
And we are absolutely open. There are certain things that we won't share with you. No, I'm sorry. We're not telling you about the fantastic wholesaler we just keep talking about because they're ours. But there's not much that we won't talk to you about. So ask the question and understand if we say, no, that's not what we're sharing. You know,
some of that information we do need to, we'll call them trade secrets. We need some of those.
Yeah.
That's my friend. Get your own.
We are still always trying to keep it fun, and we're always trying to keep those hands wet.